Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Jolene Claussen. Jolene, welcome. It's great to have you with me.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
We start at the beginning each time, and I know a little bit about you, but not very much, so we're going to learn more. Where were you born, Jolene?
I was born in Spokane, Washington, and then we moved into Portland when I was five.
Do you know the purpose of that move or the reason behind it?
Yes, my father, he was working for a company, and they had opened a new office in Portland, and they wanted him to go down and run it, so that's why we moved.
So you're not a native Oregonian, but you're pretty dang close.
Pretty dang close.
How many siblings in your family, and where do you fit in that lineup?
There are no siblings. I was an only child, so I was not only the oldest, but the youngest, and all the rest.
Did you ever wish for siblings?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I felt very, very lonely, and it was difficult for me. And the neighborhood that we moved into was a great neighborhood, but it was mostly boys. And what I really wanted more than anything was an older brother, which, of course, was a little too hard to produce. So, yes, I did really wish for siblings and made some good friends that kind of helped get through that.
So which part of Portland were you actually living in? And did you stay there or did your family move around some?
I was living in Northeast Portland, and it was unincorporated at the time. And to give you an idea of where in Northeast, I attended David Douglas High School in that particular pod area. That's where I grew up. And I stayed there until I was 18, at which time I moved to Corvallis to start college. And at the same time, my parents moved to Seattle, Washington, because, again, my father was transferred to open a new office, and they moved to Seattle.
Well, it sounds like it worked out well in terms of you being able to actually complete your schooling, your first 12 grades, at least, in one location.
Yeah, my dad was wonderful. The transfer actually took place at the end of my sophomore year, and he was really good about it. He lived with his mother in Seattle during the week and then came home on weekends just so I didn't have to transfer schools. I will always adore him for that, among other things, but that was a lot of effort on his part, but he thought that was a good thing to do.
Well, I'm sure that you have seen many, many changes in Portland over these years, but let's go back to your growing up years. And as, say, an elementary school student, tell me what you did for fun, maybe in the summer times in Portland.
Well, we had a very active and friendly neighborhood. And when we all weren't picking berries, you know, during the berry season, we were playing in the street. You know, we played softball and dodgeball and all sorts of things. And we just had the run of the community. Like, it was easy in those days because it was so much safer. So that was the fun part, and I have to laugh. I was raised in the Lutheran church, and the Lutheran church was at one end of the street, and it had a two-week vacation Bible school, and I went there. And then when that was over, the Baptist church at the other end of the street had a two-week Bible school, so we all sort of migrated there. The mothers were kept us busy for at least a month in the mornings. We were going to vacation Bible school.
I assume that you had the usual bicycles and scooters and wagons and all of those means of transportation as well.
Yes, I had a bicycle. What I really wanted was a horse, which, of course, my parents thought was absolute lunacy. So I found this old leather strap in the basement. It was probably an old belt or something. And I tied it on my bike and I used it like a rein. You know? It was pretty silly, but it was my way of connecting or thinking I had a horse when I really just had a bike, but it was okay.
And that's something I do know about you, is your love of horses. But what I don't know is, where did that get started?
From what I can tell you, it was pretty much an obsession from a very young age. I was very taken with them, and any chance I got to go near a horse, I did. And when I got, it was in junior high, a girlfriend and I, a really close friend, we were able to go out to a place on Foster where they rented horses to ride. And so we would do that. We'd save up our allowance and go out there and ride, which was fun. And I have some funny pictures of my dad at Cannon Beach as a kid. And so it was pretty much something that I always enjoyed, but I didn't really get to engage in it strongly until I was middle-aged and was pretty much established with my career and, you know, had some disposable income. And my next door neighbors invited me to go take an English riding lesson with them, which I had never done. I'd always ridden Western. And I went and I had that lesson and it was like, I was hooked. That was it. You know, that was it. That's what I'm doing. So that's how I started doing it.
And of course, growing up in the city, there wasn't really an opportunity to have a horse, say, in the backyard.
No.
You went to public school. Mm-hmm. In those early days, again, say in elementary school, did you like school?
Oh, I loved it. I did. I thought it was a lot of fun. And I had a lot of friends, and it was a very active time. No, I really enjoyed it very much.
Did you find it pretty easy to make friends?
Yeah, it was, believe it or not, I was really shy until I was about 13. So it was, you know, it was difficult, but I, you know, made myself do it because I didn't want to be always by myself. And that's what my life was like. And so it was really helpful to have lots of friends and have people come over and things like that, or go to their house. So I really wanted to do that.
As you were getting into junior high and high school, were there specific or particular subjects that were starting to stand out as things that you really enjoyed?
Yes, it became very obvious really fast that it was American history that I just adored. And it became very clear that was something that I liked very much and spent a lot of time and extra effort on. And it was at that point when I started getting the idea that what I really wanted to do was I wanted to teach it and be a history teacher. And that it started like around the seventh grade when I started thinking about that. And it just kept developing over the years.
And again, do you know where that came from? Was there maybe a particular teacher that you enjoyed? Did you talk about these kinds of things at home with your family or?
No, I was just, I don't know how you would describe it, but I was very fascinated by it. And I was always, you know, pulling books off the shelf and reading things and figuring out who Henry VIII's wives were when I was seven. And, you know, just different things like that that were fascinated by what had happened in the past and how it could impact, you know, where we were today. And I don't really know. Like, there wasn't any particular teacher, and my parents weren't particularly interested, but it was just something I really latched onto.
Also in high school, were you involved in any extracurricular kinds of things, sports, clubs, those kinds of things?
Oh, yeah. I was involved in all kinds of, you know, clubs and activities, not so much sports. I wasn't the most athletic person on the face of the planet, but I was very involved in the drama club and was in several plays and hung out, you know, around that. So I learned all aspects of the theater. If I wasn't an actor, I learned how to make costumes and how to build sets in high school. And it was fun. We had a great time doing all that. And there were lots of opportunities because in addition to plays, there were other opportunities for performance. And it was just fun. We had a lot of fun.
You enjoyed being on stage?
I did. I did like it very much. It was very easy. You know, you had your caricature and you had to perform that. And it was just like a different, I was no longer me. I was somebody else. It was fun. It was a challenge.
Was it always understood in your family that after high school you would go to college?
Yes.
And when it came time for that, how was that decision made and by whom?
Well, it was made a lot by, in the beginning, it was made by finance, you know, and the ability to fund. So needless to say, I was not going to an Ivy Leaguer at all. I did end up at a Seven Sister in grad school, but that was a while down the road. But what I really wanted to do, I was torn between going to Oregon State for undergraduate work or Pacific Lutheran, because I was raised as a Lutheran. And the only reason that I ended up not going to Pacific Lutheran and going to Oregon State was because Pacific Lutheran was way smaller than my high school. I graduated from a high school with 3,500 kids at David Douglas High School, and I needed a bigger space. I didn't feel like I could go to a college that was smaller than my high school. It just didn't feel right. And so that's where I ended up. I mean, my parents, to some degree, because they had moved to Seattle, there was a little bit of pressure about going to the University of Washington, a little bit, because they were like 5 miles from the university, I mean. And I was like, nope, not doing that. Not, you know, when I go, I'm going to go away from home and grow up, you know. So that's how it worked out. I was able to get scholarships, and so I was able to make it work for 4 years at Oregon State.
Did you live in the dorms there?
I lived in a dorm the first year, and then I had pledged a sorority. So by my sophomore year, I moved into the sorority house off campus. And that was a great experience for me, because all of a sudden I had 65 sisters, people to share the bathroom with, people to share the mirror with, you know, with some people talking when you were trying to listen, people to share the phone with. It was just great, you know, so I had to learn all of these. I mean, it wasn't real hard, but I had to adapt to having a lot of people around, which I liked very much. So I was really happy about that.
When it came time to declare a major, what did you decide on specifically?
I decided on majoring in American history and education. So that was what I declared. And as you do that, there are, you know, basic courses that you take. And one of the basic courses I had to take was an economics course. And everybody said that that was miserable and don't take too much because you're going to spend all your time with it and blah, blah, blah. And I had so much fun. I enjoyed it very much. And I enjoyed it so much, I ended up taking all these economic courses and declaring an economic minor. So it was by accident, but I really enjoyed those classes. And that's how that happened.
So you discovered something else that you really liked or wanted to investigate.
Yeah, it was fun.
Were you able to continue working in drama, in performance there as well?
At Oregon State, yes, I was able to do that. And yeah, I auditioned for a play the beginning of my junior year, just as a lark. I mean, I didn't really expect much. And I went back 2 days later just to check the cast list to see, and I'd gotten the lead female role. And so I was like, "Woo, that's exciting." And from then on, it was, you know, balancing the two, the fun and excitement of the drama, as well as keeping up with all the other things going on around me and that I was involved in as well.
What was the play?
It was The Alchemist. That's what it was. It was one of those Renaissance revivals after Charles II was reinstated in England, that drama was be able to perform again. Well, this was one of those pieces that was developed at that point, and it was a hoot. We had a lot of fun. It was a comedy. We had a lot of fun with that.
My sense is that that kind of put your interest in history and your interest in drama together in some small way.
You know, it did. It did.
So the plan was to become a teacher?
Mm-hmm.
And is that what happened?
Well, it had sort of a roundabout way. I had a wonderful academic advisor who was extremely helpful His name was Dr. O'Connor, and I got to know him and his family. In fact, he was the host at my wedding. That's how long, you know, we stayed in touch. But anyway, what he had done is he had found out that Smith College was starting a master's program. They were starting a summer program, and they wanted people to apply and go through the summer program and see if they then wanted to continue. And I'm looking at him like, what? Where? You know, Massachusetts? And he says, yeah, fill out the application. It would be good for you. So I did, thinking nothing of it, you know. I mean, here I am in Corvallis, Oregon. They probably don't even know where that is. And what do you know? They accepted me and paid for everything. So at the beginning of June, right after I graduated, I took off for Northampton, Massachusetts to enter this summer program. And what a change that was. Smith at the time was and will still be an all-girls school, all women. There were men on campus, but they couldn't matriculate. And there were these amazing professors. I mean, they were renowned, you know, and then there were kids from all over. And of course, I was the odd one because I was from out west. And I got a lot of teasing about that. But while I was there, I saw this application come through for a history and economics teacher in Connecticut. And I applied for it. And they called and said, we want to talk to you. So I went and talked to my advisor. He says, get on the bus and go. So I got on the bus and went. And they hired me. They hired me to teach in Ridgefield, Connecticut. I was so excited, I just didn't know what to think. I hadn't even thought it through of just the dynamics and the change that that would be. And I call my parents, and I'm like, excited as all get out. And they're like, not excited at all. They did not like the idea. They thought, okay, we'll let you go and play in Massachusetts for a couple of months, but by God, you're coming home. And I wasn't. But they adjusted, and I managed all the transition pieces and everything I needed to do, and I started my career.
On the other side of the country.
Yeah. It was so exciting. It was. And the one thing, I just have to tell you this because it's such an important part of this. I mean, I grew up on a street where everybody was either German or Norwegian. I mean, I used to laugh. All the food we eat is white, you know, white fish, white potatoes, white gravy, goals, you know. And this town that I was teaching in was an old, very old town. It was founded before the Revolution. But it was primarily Italian because they had all come in to work in the stoneworks. There was great stone there, and they built beautiful ceilings and things with it. But anyway, so here I am, all in my classes, and the kids' names are this long with like 10 vowels. And it was like, how do I say these names? And so I had some help with, you know, this one woman where I was renting a room in her house, and she helped me sort of figure out how to say all these Italian names. So I only goofed up a couple, but it was amazing because we didn't have Italian. I think in David Douglas High School, as large as it was, we may have had two African Americans, maybe two Asians, and a school that big and that white. It was just amazing. It was just amazing. So I had a lot to learn.
It sounds like that was very eye-opening for you.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. I was just excited as all get out to learn. And I was trying not to gain weight because everybody wanted to invite the new teacher over for dinner. And you just, if these Italian food, it was just like piles and piles, you know, it just never seemed to stop. So I had to be careful there, but it was fun.
How long did you actually stay at that job?
Well, actually, I only stayed there a year. Because Smith came back and called and said, we want you to complete the program and we're willing to fund you.
And how long was that going to be?
A year and a half. And so I left the school. I had a summer time where I had to work during the summer. And then in September, I went back to Smith and started my graduate program.
So, and that was in what specifically?
History, American history.
So you finished that out?
Right. And then I applied for a job in a neighboring school district and was hired there and began teaching again. It was pretty exciting. It was fun.
You were becoming an East Coast girl.
Oh, yeah. I was quite happy. I enjoyed it very much. The only thing I didn't enjoy is sticky. It was very humid, and that was uncomfortable. And growing up in Portland, the worst thing we had to worry about was sugar ants. You know, there were so many bugs in the summer that you had to have a screen porch or you would just be devoured. It was unbelievable. I don't know how anybody lived through that. You just had to be careful. You know, there were a lot of them, especially if you were around any water at all.
There's so many pieces that we're not going to have time to fill in here, but so how long did you actually stay back there on the East Coast, and then where did you go from there? Did you head back here to the Northwest, or were there some
places? I stayed for 4 years, and then I came home. There were some issues at home with family loss, and there was some difficulty for my mother losing the person that was as close to a father as she ever had, and my father's mother passed away, and different things were going on, and it was like, we need you to come home. And I was like, oh, all right. I didn't really want to, but I did. And so I ended up back in Seattle to begin with, working at night and substitute teaching during the day until I could get a job. And that just about drove me nuts, but it was hard. But eventually I did get back into teaching for a while. And then I made a big career change when I was about 35. I got involved in local government in Portland as a volunteer.
So you had moved to Portland at some point.
I had moved to Portland to teach at Mount Hood Community College and then got involved in, like I said, in local government. And to make a long story short, eventually began working for the city of Portland. Prior to that, I was working for a nonprofit that interacted with the city of Portland, with the Neighborhood Association. And then I got a position working for the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and eventually ended up working for the Portland Development Commission, which was one of my favorite jobs. I enjoyed that very much.
And we'll pick that one up another time because there's obviously a million stories right there.
Oh.
But at some point, well, you said you grew up Lutheran. Is it safe to say that as your life was progressing, you continued to be involved in Lutheran congregations in the various places that you were living? Or what was some of that story?
Well, there weren't any Lutheran churches in the area where I was in Massachusetts or Connecticut, needless to say. And at some point, I would say probably 1981, I was chairing a neighborhood meeting, and there was this really good-looking reporter in the front row who I thought was adorable and turned out to be Alan Clausen.
You're in Portland.
Yeah, and so we both lived in the same area, had the same interest in neighborhoods and what was going on, and we married, and a few years after we were married, I became a Mennonite.
And the church that you've been attending for a long time is Portland Mennonite.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about how you feel about Portland Mennonite.
Well, now it's a lot different from what it felt like when I first started. Poor Rod. I mean, it wasn't Rod at the time. It was Ralph. And he was a delightful pastor as well. But I was befuddled by the fact that they wore street clothes. I thought, what? And I was used to a more formal service. A lot of what we did when I was younger was in Latin, even though we weren't Catholic. It's just a lot of, the Mennonites are so much simpler. And what really helped was the singing was so beautiful. I was just taken by it. At first I thought, how can we do this without an organ? And then I realized it's a good thing we don't have one, you know, because it'd drown us out. But I was amazed at the singing. And so eventually, you know, it took time. I got to know people and involved in the church, and it became like home. I mean, there are times when I miss some of the differences in the Lutheran church. And like I said, my whole life was that, was growing up, you know. But.
And would you consider the Lutherans a little bit what we might call high church in some of the liturgical kinds of things? Is that what you miss?
Very, very. If you didn't know the difference, you might think that it might be Catholic, but it wasn't. I mean, it was much different, but there was a lot of the same. It's very liturgical. A lot of that, the pastor was the leader. These lay leaders really surprised me. That was amazing to me. I mean, that would never happen in the church that I grew up in. So one of the things, when my mother died in 2010, right around Christmas time, so Christmas all of a sudden became this big blank, because she was always part of the celebrations, because I had moved her here from Seattle. And so Alan decided we were going to go to the beach. You know, we're going to celebrate Christmas at the beach, to come back and go to Dallas, where his family is, and have family Christmas there. Well, we checked out of our B&B, I guess you'd say it was, and we had time. So we went to, we got into Dallas, and we had time. So we went to the Lutheran church there, because Alan knew the pastor there from basketball games. He had met him there. So we show up at this Lutheran church in Dallas, and I was quite comfortable. It worked out just fine. And Alan was like, what am I supposed to do next? I said, shh. And the pastor said, what are you two Mennonites doing in my church? So we got to talk to him, and it was fun. That was a fun thing to do. He was a very nice guy. We liked him very much. And whenever there would be some question about my reaction to something, he would say, Alan, she was raised a Lutheran. Give her a break. So, because it was different. So then after that church service, we went to dinner with Alan's mom and everybody. So that was fun.
And I might just add that this young woman who grew up Lutheran now leads worship at Portland Mennonite from time to time.
Yeah, that does surprise me sometimes. Well, I enjoy that. It's a wonderful opportunity to connect and just look out over that congregation and see everybody, which you don't do when you're just sitting in the pew. But I like to see and, oh, there's, you know, and see where everybody is. I like that.
And we are delighted to have you as a person who enjoys doing that. So thank you on behalf of the congregation. Well, there are so many more stories, but we are out of time. So, Jolene, thank you so much for taking the time to share these glimpses of your amazing life with us.
Well, thank you for asking me. I'm very honored by it.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.